afternoon. Senator Hobbins, Representative Hink, members of Joint Standing Committee on Utilities and Energy. My name is John Cooney. I'm the Vice President of Finance and Development for Reed & Reed. We are a general construction firm that's headquartered in Woolwich, Maine. I reside in Brunswick. I'm here to testify in opposition of LD 1504. I have prepared some comments which are being distributed presently. I'm going to summarize the slides that I have. The first three slides I like to call wind power by the numbers. 2020, 3,000, 2.5, and $7.5 billion. 2020 is the year established by the governor's task force to install 3,000 megawatts and reduce carbon emissions by 10%, as Peter Dittesheim has already mentioned. The 2.5 is the approximate cost per megawatt to install wind energy in the state of Maine. And $7.5 billion represents the total capital investment required to achieve the targets established by the legislature. I'd like to spend a few minutes going over the capital investment overview. The capital investments on these projects are significant, and they translate into tangible economic benefits, without question. The development cost, engineering and design cost, turbine procurement, transmission, interconnect facilities, roads, turbine foundations, the turbine installation and erection, the electrical works, collector system, substations, transmission lines, operations, maintenance facilities. The balance of plant investment are the types of cost for the project, excluding owner development, turbine procurement, operations, and maintenance cost. Typically, those are the types of cost.
What's it all about?
Reed & Reed brings to the table when we perform this business activity in the state of Maine. On all the projects that we've done to date, there's been significant benefit to vendors and suppliers within the state of Maine. Concrete supply, electric materials, reinforcing steel, steel fabrications, fuel, lumber supplies. There are also a lot of jobs during construction. Those jobs are varied and they're high paying. The jobs include managers, skilled engineers, surveyors, technicians, operators, carpenters, millwrights, laborers, riggers, electricians, and other types of specialists. In every project that we've performed to date, there's been significant involvement and benefit to the local businesses of these committees, these communities. And I've listed several of them. But I also go to these projects on a weekly and biweekly basis. And whenever I stop at the gas station, or if I stay at the hotel up to Sugarloaf because we have a meeting the next day, I'm always asking the people in the local community, or if you go to the store, you go get lunch, what their perspective on these projects are. And I rarely have heard an indication that there's a feeling of lack of economic benefit in their community. Specifically to Kibbe, we did a study and we report monthly. To date, we've been on that job a year, and we've determined that over $10 million just of our budget have been spent within 25 miles of the project. Maybe it's 35, but if you go to Kibbe and you draw a radius to Stratton and Eustis and Sugarloaf, it's significant money that's directly gone to the vendors and members of the community. In terms of construction jobs and payroll, we're in strong position to advise what the economic impact is of these construction jobs. There's actually a typo on the construction jobs and payroll page. I apologize for that. The analysis that we've done, we've actually discussed this with Charlie Colgan, is about $288,000 per megawatt installed, just of construction wages. Now, if you take the 3,000 megawatts times the $288,000, that's $864 million of wages, and over 95% of those construction wages go to Maine employees. The wages are high. On average, in total, it's about $31 an hour. All these jobs have benefits, health insurance, retirement, vacation, holiday. There are full-time jobs created by these projects. There are operations and maintenance positions created by the owners of the jobs. But what's also happening is as the turbine generators are populated in the Northeast, there's a side impact in terms of the maintenance and operations. So, for example, Reed is a certified maintenance contractor with General Electric. We're also working to make a similar arrangement for Vestas and Siemens. And these are all turbine suppliers. And as they put their units up in the Northeast, they need regular and significant maintenance that requires skilled technicians and the heavy equipment that we've invested approximately $20 million in over the last 2.5 years. I have a slide that summarizes the economic impact in Maine. The balance of plant work typically represents 40 to 50% of the total project cost. Kibbe project is, for example, I've heard $375 million. If you have 45% of $7.5 billion, that's $3.375 billion of direct economic impact, notwithstanding the multiplier of these projects in the state of Maine. And I also just mentioned the maintenance work that's becoming a separate market, wind farm operations and maintenance. And we're also leveraging federal tax dollars that are coming to Maine by these projects. There are also property tax revenues that are significant. There are also sales tax revenues that are very significant because I happen to be undergoing a sales and use tax audit, and I'm also part of, there's been a determination letter request by one of our clients, and we're really trying to figure out the taxability of the infrastructure of these projects, and at least at the initial outset, that there's significant tax dollars that are going to be assessed on the infrastructure of these projects. So again, that's another indication of the tangible economic benefit of this the wind energy. In conclusion, Maine should roll out the welcome mat for wind power. The benefits of wind energy projects are environmental and economic. LD 1504 is not necessary. Please do not tinker with the language. And if 1504 is not a tax, it is a handout that will ultimately be reflected in higher rates. When I went to school, we had a class, economics, and one of the first things the economics professor wrote on the wall that there are no free lunches. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions at all?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question as to whether you're opposed to the original language of the bill or to the replacement language of the bill.
That's a good question. I haven't really studied Peter's version of the bill, so I'm going to reserve a little bit of comment. I think that our clients, these projects are financial transactions, and when they price financial risk, if they can eliminate certainty, it's helpful. So any resolution that addresses that requirement for them to proceed and underwrite a project is helpful. But I can tell you right now that the wind energy is not healthy. It is still reeling from the economic crisis that we all are living today. And these projects are highly leveraged, and with the failure of Lehman Brothers and some several syndicates in Europe, that the takeout financing from these projects disappeared overnight, and they haven't come back yet. And also on top of that, with the economic crisis, that tax increment financing required for these financial transactions to work, there's no market for that tax benefit.
I guess I have another question. I appreciate your presentation. I'm trying to look a little beyond just the construction phase. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the construction phase is a huge industry, and there's huge dollars involved. And I'd just like to ask you for your reflection a little bit. Once you get beyond the construction phase, obviously, Senator Mills was asking some questions as to what are not only the short-term, but some of the long-term benefits to me. You know, we've as a committee struggled with the issue, as you heard a few minutes ago, of how do we capture some of the rate benefits, because of the way the contracts are structured. A lot of the value of the wind is priced at, in fact, natural gas, and goes to other people, not to main ratepayers. It goes to owners of the project, or Wall Street bankers, or owners of the buildings, or whomever. So part of, I guess, I'm asking is, have you thought about beyond the construction phase, and the fact that there's a social contract? The analogy I come up with is hydropower, which was a good one. You know, those were licensed in a way for 50 years, 40 years, 30 years. They were constructed. It was a public resource. We're addressing that same kind of an issue now, where the dams were built many years ago for great reason. We needed electricity for hospitals and all these other things. But because they were licensed over a period of time, there was an opportunity for society to renegotiate the contract with the owner of that dam somewhere down the road, which we've just been going through that process. I think the struggle here, and I'm interested in your thoughts, is we're trying to figure out how to look at wind power not just as a construction project, but as a contract over the life of that project, for the local residents and the ratepayers and the taxpayers of the state of Maine, and how do you better allocate benefits and costs over time once the construction phase is gone? And you folks are obviously in the construction business. You don't want barriers to that. Neither do we. We want more wind projects. But I think the nature of Senator Mills' question, and it was an excellent one, is how do we capture that contract with the owners of that project over the lifetime? That's what I'm struggling with. And property taxes, I think in his conclusion, the property tax, the mill rate going to that local town, maybe isn't enough. Maybe it's not the best mechanism, and we're trying to come up with another mechanism for how to capture some of the impacts and benefits that will accrue to or be suffered by people in the region after the construction phase is gone. Have you guys struggled with that? I mean, that's different, and I know it's going a little bit out of your realm. I'm just curious as to see what your reflection might be as we get beyond that construction phase.
Well, there were elements of my presentation that dealt with the construction jobs, because I do think those are important, but there are also elements that don't. And the $7.5 billion in capital investment is something that creates tangible personal property. You know, it's tangible property that's built in the state of Maine, and we have mechanisms in place in the state of Maine to tax that property, the income generated from that property, and this is a very immature industry. I think it's going to play out over time, but I tried to focus my presentation on the magnitude of that capital investment, because as I sit here today, and yes, I do work for a construction firm, but I also live in Brunswick, Maine. I'm a taxpayer. I've been here for a long time, and we want what's best for our state, and I don't see a lot of options. I don't see mills coming in and putting a $5 billion pulp and paper plant. So we have to try to encourage capital investment and realize the benefits that come with that. Now, they may not be everything that another type of capital investment has, but I don't believe that should restrain us from not encouraging that capital investment, because frankly, if I actually saw a lot of emails, because this isn't the first time there's been a question about what does tangible economic benefit mean to the state of Maine, and that question's been out there for a long time. And when LURC read that statute, I think they struggled in terms of what does that mean, and they sent a lot of emails out to agencies that they felt were stakeholders, and I've actually seen a lot of those responses, and you wouldn't believe what they received from all the different agencies as it related to their interpretation of what tangible economic benefit could mean to them. You know, one agency was like, well, we can have a green jobs fund, so we should make them put money in that. And, you know, another agency says, well, geez, you know, we need money too, and we should ask them to put money here. So I think that concept is a challenge for the state. I think the process is going to be played out, but I just want to remind people that it's a fragile industry, and sophisticated owners and developers can very easily put these projects somewhere else, and I think that we need to be very careful of how we change our policy so that we do not disrupt the flow of capital to the state of Maine, because that in itself is a permanent, tangible economic benefit.
Thank you very much for your comments. Is there anyone else who would like to speak in opposition to this? Good afternoon, Mr. O'Neill.